This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
When investigators opened the front trunk of a Tesla, they didn't just uncover a body, they uncovered a snapshot of panic. Of course, we're talking about the David case and the Celeste body in there, the kind of impulsive split-second decision that says more about psychology than actual planning. A 14-year-old girl, a 20-year-old musician, and a choice that makes no rational sense. We don't even know if he's the one who put it in there, but we know the vehicle was registered to him. Hiding a body in a car, registered to one's own name. It's not criminal genius. It's not the collapse of judgment. Something we see over and over again when young people make catastrophic choices that destroy lives in an instant. And, well, David was surrounded by other young people that seem to be very good at making catastrophic choices in an instant. Today, we're joined by psychotherapist Siobhan Scott, unpacking the psychology of that decision, the why behind these senseless choices, and what the developing brain has to do with all of it. Siobhan, welcome. Obviously, there's a lot of questions here still in this case. We don't know who put the body in the trunk. No one has been charged in this case whatsoever. We don't even know exactly how she died yet, but somebody thought this was a good idea. Let's start with the basics. When we talk about impulsivity and poor decision making in young people, what's actually happening in the brain here? How does the prefrontal cortex, or the lack of it in full development, affect the judgment of those making these critical decisions in critical moments, whoever made this choice?
Yeah, it's a really good point. You know, we can separate the brain into different parts, and we often use a kind of an oversimplified model of the triune brain. Mm-hmm. But you've got the primitive brain, which is the brainstem, and that's what keeps your heart beating, keeps you breathing, keeps your, you know, your basic motor skills going. Then you've got that emotional center of the brain, which is moving up toward the front, and that emotional center of the brain has all your emotions and your drives and your neurohormonal system, right? But then you've got the prefrontal cortex, which is the very last part to develop in the brain and the last part to evolve in mammals. And that's what we call the thinking brain. That's where you get judgment, impulse control, and your ability to analyze facts and situations and you know, make plans, the executive part of the brain. And that is, unfortunately, the last part of the brain to develop. So you've got this emotional center on the brain, on high-powered hormonal influences, everything's cooking in there. But this thinking part of the brain, the part that can say, hey, stand back, think about this, take another course of action, maybe this isn't the right thing, that part of the brain doesn't really come online until about 25, which is why we see so many young people doing really stupid things. Now, I think a case could also be made that for some people, it never really does come online. And that's mm-hmm. the person with chronic problems. And often you see that with people who become criminals. It's sort of like the thinking brain just never really plugged in there. You know, we'll often talk about criminal psychopaths as if they're some kind of geniuses. You know, they've got this criminal superpower. In truth, most of them are pretty darn stupid. And mm-hmm. make stupid mistakes.
Is there something that happens that that stunts the growth of this? I mean, and we're talking like physical growth here to a certain extent, but is there something when you're talking earlier, like some folks that where it never comes online, it seems, are there things that can inhibit that from ever coming online that could be outside things such as chemicals, drugs, yep. alcohol, things of that nature, but also environmental things as well, conditional things as well, yep. ways that one may be living their life. I'm curious about all of that. Let's start with the physical things that one could end up putting in their body that could do that. Then let's move on to more conditional, situational type things.
Yeah, great question. Because things going all the way back to birth trauma to the head at birth can cause problems in maturation of the brain and the frontal lobes not developing right. You mentioned substances can certainly impair brain development. And the way that kids are parented influences it. So you can encourage kids through lots of problem solving, encouraging them to talk things through. So it's the combination of the environment, toxins in the environment, injuries to the head or the brain, going all the way back to birth. And so sometimes there are substances that a mother might ingest during pregnancy that affect the brain development of her fetus and ultimately the child that she produces. So there's so many variables with it.
Kind of makes you wonder how any of us turn out to be somewhat quote unquote normal at this point, doesn't it? I mean, doesn't it seem like there should be more psychopaths walking the earth based on those variables?
Secret, there is.
Thanks, Tony.
Surprise! They just don't all act out. I mean, yeah. I mean, is that? I mean, am I accurate in that statement, Siobhan?
I think so. I think so. I think you know, full blown psychopaths with all the terrible qualities that psychopaths have that are extreme are not that common. But sure, people who are on the continuum with some psychopathic behavior, I think about 30% of the human population has to some degree some significant psychopathic traits. You know, there's a book out, and I just started reading it this week. It's been out for a few months, called Murderland. And it's a fascinating book. If true crime people like to read these kind of things, I would recommend it. But the theory behind the book is that why did the Pacific Northwest produce Ted Bundy and the Green River Killer and all these other, you know, apparently we have more than our share of them up here where I live in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. And going into the history of the industrialization of this part of the country with all the mills and the smelters and all the stuff that was happening, things became incredibly polluted back in the 40s and 50s.
When you got nuclear out there, too.
Yeah, that wasn't identified because she was going back in her research to the 40s and 50s, and the specific toxins were lead and arsenic. But that really impacts little children developmentally, and she makes the case that this could have impacted the brain. I'm not done with the book yet, so I don't know how well she wraps it all up together. But it's a very interesting book. But again, going back to, does our environment affect brain development and ultimately why people end up with poor judgment or impaired decision-making?
I know. I mean, a lot of people, I think, are looking at this David case, and everybody runs everything through their filter of how would I have done it? Right. And I think a lot of adults will look at this and go, whoever did this. And I think the assumption is it was probably somebody in the circle of David or Dave. Nobody knows who it is, but somebody likely in that ring, because they were close. And if we look at the circle, they're all pretty much young people, very young people. So somebody made the decision to put that body in that trunk. We don't know if it was out of fear of, and we don't know the motive. That's the thing. Was it fear of being caught? Was it fear of whatever it may have been? Was she murdered? Was it self-inflicted? All those questions we don't know the answers to. But when you go to that, everybody's going, well, when I was that age, I wouldn't have thought that way. I would have been smart enough not to do that. I myself, when I ran that through, I wouldn't have put a body in a trunk if you were in that sort of a situation, no matter what. That, like, somebody's dead, accident, on purpose, whatever the hell it is. I don't see any way where one goes, well, I'll just hide it in the trunk and this will be a great resting place. Right. We'll totally get away with it. And so that runs through the filters. But is it, I mean, obviously everybody develops a bit different in terms of their prefrontal cortex and these types of decision making. Is there something here that we can look at more tangibly and say, okay, the folks who are thinking this way, this is part of a greater picture. This is part of a greater picture of development of these large groups of people. It felt like there was usually a couple in the group that were pretty stupid that would have thought, yeah, trunk's a great idea, let's do it. But it usually wasn't the collective group as a whole that was making absolute horrible decisions. There was usually somebody in those groups back then that would be, no, guys, let's do this. Yeah, that makes more sense. It feels like that's absent from a lot of youth today. And I guess that's the big question is why does it feel so different when we're looking at and interacting with folks of this age? Not all of them by any means, but it feels like numbers far greater than there was even 10 years ago in terms of just having what most would just call common sense.
Yeah, I can't speak to data. You know me, I always go, if I'm going to say it, I want to say I have data on it. And I don't have any data on our young people getting dumber in this way.
Right.
I'd say observationally they are. but yes, I don't have any data on it either.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess the question is, you know, is it so... Because there is different ways, obviously, of looking at intelligence and dumb, stupid. That's a very relative term. But, you know, is it where it's accelerating in areas that we hadn't in the past? And then in this area over here, we're missing something of a connection to humanity. It feels like is missing in a lot of people, a lot of young people, when you talk to them about stuff, just the lack of, I guess, understanding or empathy for fellow human beings. I mean, I see it in my own world. I see it with, you know, I have a daughter who's 13. It's interesting to see the way she reacts to things. It's interesting to hear how her friends react to things. And some of it just seems very cold and extremely callous. Mm-hmm. Like, far colder and callous than I remember people being not all that long ago.
It feels like the empathy is gone. And yeah. I can't put my finger on what's happened. Is it because we had a pandemic and pulled some of these kids out of socialization for a number of years, and now they, you know, things that they were seeing were on screens, so they weren't seeing in-person reactions and things like that. I don't know. It just feels like people are not as empathetic as they used to be. Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
It's certainly a concern, the lack of empathy, that I think internet culture can also fuel it with mm-hmm. the kinds. And again, depending on what, not that the internet's a bad thing. I spend a lot of time on the internet, as you guys know, but it depends on what you're looking at. And is there a lot of content that people are getting caught up online that is basically encouraging this sense of disconnection? And is that mainly how people are having relationships, you know, online? And maybe mm-hmm. the lack of those deeper human relationships could have something to do with why people seem to be relating to each other with less empathy and kindness.
I mean, that seems to be one of the bigger factors is, you know, everybody has their phone, everybody interacts in these ways that are not ways that humanity has ever interacted in the past.
Right.
So it's like brand new territory as to how our brains will work with this. And evolution takes time for us to adapt to things like this. I mean, let's talk about that for a second. I mean, just the ways that we interact now, especially kids that are brought up interacting the ways that they do with each other, the lack of human interaction. What sort of world are we creating here? What sort of, you know, evidence are we seeing of this seems to be a slightly different group of folks that are coming up because of the conditions in which they're growing up around?
I think it's really changing brains, and we don't know a lot about how because we don't have long-term data on all that yet. But I think people's ability to, you know, have practical level social skills in real social environments is probably altered. I definitely see a lot of impact when it comes to young men and their use of internet porn and then their ability to date women, real life mm-hmm. women, mm-hmm. and to learn how to talk and how to build connections and friendships and how to ask people out and how to do those early phases of how do you explore sexuality with your partner. They think everything is supposed to work like a porn movie, and that's concerning. And so that's, I think, for me as a therapist, that's where it shows up a lot, that we're seeing a very different kind of young man because of the internet porn.
That's a really interesting point.
And that's an interesting point on this. A lot of people are jumping to conclusions that this was some sort of a romantic relationship that was going on between David and Celeste, and now she's dead, so it must be the partner. And again, he's never been charged with anything. We don't know what actually happened here. We also don't know if they were in a romantic relationship as well. That seems to be a very quick thing that the internet is jumping to as a conclusion. Society is jumping to as a conclusion. I would argue maybe there wasn't a romantic relationship here at all. This was a friend. This was someone that maybe, you know, he was confiding in. There's a lot of, you know, guys that are friends with women that it's not a sexual relationship and it's completely normal. And they can be straight. They can be gay. It doesn't really matter. But I think that that seems to be another area that people are jumping to conclusion on here a little fast. What's your thoughts on that in terms of there being a romantic tie here, or if that's just us or society trying to fill in the blanks of questions where we have blank spaces?
Well, as you said, there's a lot of blank spaces, but there are areas of concern. And I did find, I had to look for it, but I did find the deleted live stream video of David with Celeste. Mm-hmm. And she was clearly a child. Mm-hmm. He clearly seemed to be in control. There was a lot of concerning body language going on. And there did seem to be quite a degree of intimacy between the two of them. Mm-hmm. She was a runaway, a vulnerable kid, obviously had much less power in the world than he has. And I can, raise my eyebrows. It was something I think if I were investigating this, I would certainly be looking very closely at that relationship.
I mean, it makes you think, like, what's going through your mind? Why are you bringing in, and it's probably not, they're not thinking of it in these ways, of you're bringing in a runaway, you know, that the person should be either reunited with their family or get help if the family's not a safe place to be, whatever it may be. We don't know the answers to all those questions. But the thought is, well, let's basically kind of make her part of the posse here. Mm-hmm. And do live streams with her, this girl that's supposedly missing. Again, that's another thing where are they just completely void of thinking of this in reality's terms of what's going on around them? Is this just, she's just another person? I mean, and at that age too, you're 20. It was not that long ago. You were 15. It was like literally 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So you are still fairly immature in your thinking, and you may have friends who are of that age too. That's not unheard of at that point in time. So what do you think is going on in the minds of people like this, especially in that live stream, just knowing what we know now that she was missing at that time, supposedly, he's someone that has some money, some power, some clout going on. What the hell are you doing live streams with a runaway for? I mean,
good question.
I mean, what? It's just, I can't picture this like happening as blatantly as it is today, 10, 20 years ago. R. Kelly, as monstrous as he was, I don't see him like jumping on live streams if the ability was there all those years ago with people that were known to be like missing. It's kind of unfathomable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing that stood out for me with the live stream was near the end of it when he said, we've got to delete this. How do we delete this?
Yeah.
And there is some consciousness of maybe I just blew it here. And how do we get rid of it? So,
yeah.
It definitely, I can see why the public would be going there with the fears. And if I were investigating the case, I'd sure be looking at it. Was there a relationship here? Because even though, yes, it is normal for 20-year-olds to still hang out and be friends with younger people, it's also very normal for older males to sexually exploit younger females. Sure. And she was a beautiful young woman, and that would not surprise anybody, I don't think, if that were happening.
No, whether it was him or someone in the group, I would not be surprised if that was happening. I don't know, you know, who or what or if at all, but obviously that could possibly be part of this. We don't have the answers to any of that. Yeah. You've worked with a lot of young people in your life. I mean, what are some of the common patterns that you've seen in their thinking right after a crime? Do they truly believe that they can outsmart detection, or is it more like magical thinking under duress?
You can certainly see magical thinking, which is that tendency to believe that just because I want something really bad, or I pray, or I do some kind of ritual, that it's going to go my way. And that, again, is something that a lot of people carry into adulthood. But there can be that. And sometimes there's an awareness that I'm probably going to get caught, but I'm going to delay it for as long as I can. Mm-hmm. And so when they get caught, they're not really surprised. So it can go either way with that. But yeah, the poor judgment of whoever thought leaving a body in a trunk and then leaving the car in a public place, that this was a good idea, there was something wrong. The other thing that popped into my head as a possibility, kids partying, drugs, alcohol, could this have been something where somebody was even in a blackout and mm-hmm. did something really stupid, and then the next day doesn't even recall what they did and how it happened? That could account for really bad judgment too, because sometimes people do really stupid things in a blackout and they just don't have any recollection of what they did.
It makes you wonder, because you don't know what went on, and all those things run through my mind as well. The fact that the last known photo of her, proof of being alive, basically, was January 2nd. Does that say anything to you about this case of what may have went down? I mean, just pure speculation. We obviously don't know. But right after New Year's, I don't know. I mean, that's a time where, you know, a lot of change happens around mm-hmm. us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of times weird things do happen in January because there has been so much, if we look at substance use, so much of that going on over the holidays. I used to always joke that you were going to get all the calls from couples needing marital therapy in January because people had behaved so badly at the New Year's Eve party. So
mm-hmm. I've seen that.
And that's yep. true. Yeah.
Yeah. There's just so many questions here in this case that we just do not know the answers to, and likely never will. Who knows what will eventually come out as the investigation continues. They did hire a private investigator. The owner of the house that David was allegedly renting has hired a private investigator, to which the way he's describing it, and I'm paraphrasing here, the private investigator is claiming he found notes inside of that house. We don't know if they were digital, if they were on a hard drive of some sort, or if they were on print, that described horrific things, very sadistic things is the way I believe the term that he used, involving Celeste. And I guess there's two ways of looking at that, of sadistic and dark, meaning when she was alive or after she died. Things to dispose of a body and not be caught, or things that you would do to a living person. Mm-hmm. Again, disturbing either way, really. But does the judgment change in people's minds, especially young people's minds, I guess, when talking about the lack of the prefrontal cortex, from when a person is living to when the person is deceased? I guess the defining factor here is how they died. If it was an accident, if they overdosed on something, if they took their own life, and now this is a problem. The term is also the Celeste problem that was used by the PI, meaning we have a 15-year-old girl that's dead with us, and now we don't know what to do because she was a runaway and we were harboring a runaway. What do we do with that? In terms of what people are capable of doing, do people start dehumanizing that individual upon death?
Certainly possible. It could also be that this was, you know, again, are we looking at just youth and stupid youthful behavior, impulsive, poorly thought out, lack of problem solving skills? Are we looking at that? Or are we looking at something darker where there is something more exploitative and psychopathic and cruel going mm-hmm. on? And I can also see why the public would make a leap in that direction based upon some of the song lyrics, you know, right. And again, we look at all these things in the context, and writing a song about wanting to kill somebody is not necessarily mean you're going to go out and kill people, or that you even fantasize about it. But there is that concept of leakage, which, as we've talked about so many times, when the internal thoughts and emotions that a person have comes out in their conversation, maybe in their internet things they write, or in art that they create. And that mm-hmm. would include song lyrics too. And so if people have written songs about murder. And then there's a dead body found. Of course, people are going to make the leap. Did that song, was that leakage? Is this something that was actually part of your fantasy that you had been thinking about?
He had the song that came out in 2022, Romantic Homicide. So obviously this would have been way before any of this had taken place. It's dark. It's, it's the type of music that he made. I've heard the term the other day for the first time, sad boy music. There's sad girl music, and I know we've seen that forever, but sad boy music, and that's kind of what his music was. It was dark, it was sad, it was somewhat disturbing R&B music about loss, about tragedy, about trying to deal with the thoughts and emotions and the feelings, all that's there. And then we hear, and again, this is again another big piece of the unconfirmed, we don't know the details, that there was lyrics or part of a song that was created, written, found somewhere, called Celeste. If in fact he wrote a song, again, big if this happened, if he wrote a song for her, knowing that she was dead and that the body was somewhere with his crew, that's another big weird one of like, oh, we're gonna take this through our art, and we're gonna make music about it. Mm-hmm. It just seems like such weird magical thinking of what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Why are you creating this song about someone, a death that nobody is, this girl is missing? It blows your mind. It really does. And the fact that someone would do that, let's say he did do that, what does that say?
Mm-hmm. Some people are very unaware of what they're leaking out, and they're continually processing. This may be true for artists very much so, maybe that they're constantly doing this internal processing and taking it external. So they're creating certain kinds of paintings, creating certain kinds of poetry, certain kinds of songs, always based upon what's cooking in their head. Mm-hmm. And so it could just be the lack of awareness. Gee, what's cooking in my head? Maybe I need to keep that to myself.
Yeah. That lack of awareness seems to be key in so many of these cases. Let's talk about another case, the Lankin Snelling case. This one showed up in a college apartment, a young woman, a cheerleader, giving birth alone in the night, then hiding her newborn baby's body in a closet. Another tragedy, in a different way than the David one. Two different tragedies, same kind of psychological thread. Both show what happens when fear and denial overpower reason, when the young brain, not yet wired for long-term thinking, clings to one irrational belief. If no one sees it, it isn't real. Siobhan Scott is with us, digging into the psychology of the concealment, how fear, shame, and underdeveloped impulse control can lead young people to make decisions that destroy their lives in an instant. When you look at a case like Lankin Snelling's, a 21-year-old college student giving birth alone and then hiding the baby, I mean, what psychological forces do you see colliding in this moment?
The first thing that came to mind when I read about Lankin Snelling's case was the idea of very likely what we call a cryptic pregnancy. And this is it sounds very strange, particularly to most of us who have ever been pregnant. But, and I do have data on this one, 1 in 500 women get to their 5th month of pregnancy, so about 20-some weeks, without any awareness that they're pregnant. Mm-hmm. Now, 1 in 2,500 get all the way to birth without being aware that they're pregnant. And this it feels so hard to believe that you could be walking around 8 or 9 months pregnant and not know that you're pregnant. And there are some psychological things going along with that. There's denial, you know, again, going back to magical thinking, if I don't want it to be true, it's just not going to be true. And then people carry, depending on their body type and where the placenta is located, and, you know, they carry the babies differently. And often they just think they're gaining weight, or their families think they're gaining weight. And so that was the first thing that came to mind, because usually when you see a neonatal murder of the baby right after birth, it's it's been one of these cryptic pregnancy situations where the pregnancy was hidden and you had this really interesting mix of factors going on that the people around the young woman didn't know she was pregnant either. And that's usually the outcome.
Here's what's really strange about this. She went to, I think a costume party dressed as a pregnant mom. And she wore like a button that said like Kentucky mom or something of that nature. And there was a picture of her like holding her belly, you know, like a pregnant woman would do. And, you know, it was all just kind of joking. But I'm wondering at that point, I didn't do the math. I didn't count the months. But would she have been pregnant that much at that point? I mean, was this all some weird foretelling of the future? Was this her pretending? Was this her going, oh shit, I am pregnant. Now I'm going to just fake it so that people don't know that I am. And there's so many variables in this case.
Yeah. There really are. And we really don't know. I think if we had the opportunity to sit down with her and have a nice long conversation, it would start to get clear. And it could go in a variety of ways, but she was clearly an intelligent person. She was not a mentally ill person. Usually in these cases, you don't find psychosis, you don't find other kinds of major mental illness, but the folks do tend to be on the younger side, often teenagers, often they're lower income, not always, but there's often this sense of, I don't want anyone to think badly of me. And so there's this tendency to want to preserve status. And so they convince themselves either that they're not pregnant or that this is all just going to go away somehow.
You know, it's not like we live back in the old days where, you know, oh my God, she's pregnant. We're going to have to send her away to a, you know, boarding school somewhere so nobody in the community finds out. That's not how things are today. So it seems like a very strange circumstance that, mm-hmm. you know, ooh, I'm pregnant out of wedlock. I must be shunned. That's not how we view things in today's society. So why go down this path of nobody can know this about me? I feel very sad for her that she couldn't call mom and dad and say, I've got a problem. Something mm-hmm. has happened. Or maybe I've always wanted to be a mom because I read that about her, that she talked about wanting to be a mom. Well, maybe it just happened earlier. Why not embrace mm-hmm. it and go, okay, it's not what I planned at this time, but here we are. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't she talk to people around her? Why was there this facade of, I must be this perfect cheerleader and you know, I'm this upstanding woman and this is a tragic thing that happened to me that I have to hide?
Yeah, it does make you wonder about the kind of support she had around her. And even though overall in society, I don't think we're as brutal as we used to be on young unmarried women who get pregnant, certainly not as brutal as we used to be. Right. But it can still vary within families. And some families have very, very high expectations for their kids. And the kids are very ashamed when they don't measure up. And so could that have been a factor here? Maybe based upon the family, maybe.
I think we got to take a look at maybe how she's looking at it. It might not be from that prism. Was this a choice of because the baby was going to be inconvenient or because it was shameful? You know, and I don't know that it was necessarily that she's looking at it as shameful as it was inconvenient, and she had a means to an end. It seems very simplistic, but I wonder if that's just more of what it was. It was inconvenient. It messes up her body. She clearly had a thing about her body. You know, look at her pictures. That's all it was all about. Look at
but
me.
But she ended
look
up
at me,
giving
look at
birth
me.
To it, so it's not like this was...
No, well, yes, she did. But look at me, look at me, look at me. Now I got a baby. This could be, you know, it could very well interrupt the social life that she wanted to present and the way that she wanted people to see her. Maybe not necessarily even considering the prism as to which others would see her in, which I'm going to guess just, I don't know her family or anything, but just looking at the folks that she was surrounding herself by. If someone had a child, I don't think they would have shunned her with a scarlet letter. It would have been looked at probably in a much more kind light. But again, you have to consider the prism she's looking at it in and what sort of cognitive distortions may have been going on in her mind about how other people viewed her. Mm-hmm. Would that be accurate?
It sure could be, but yeah, going back to her concern about her body and the impact of a pregnancy on that, where my mind went is terminations. This was Kentucky, right? So
yes. Yeah.
I don't know what the status in the last year, what her options would have been to terminate the pregnancy.
I believe it was illegal from 22 on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was not an option for her. But there were safe haven baby boxes available. There's one at the Lexington Fire Department right down the road from her. There were things she could have done. She could have put the baby up for adoption, which, you know, her family probably would have been made aware that she was pregnant at this time. Maybe not. She's an adult. She's an adult. She's over 18 years old.
Yeah.
What she does is her own business. I think there are other options to do than just snuff the baby out and put mm-hmm. it in a closet.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I mean, the reports say it happened around 4 a.m. There's even what makes this monstrous sounding is the reports that there was evidence of a birth and that there was even that she had heard the sound of the baby. Does that detail sound like panic setting in that you're going to get rid of it or premeditated concealment? Like when I have this, if I have this, obviously it's going to happen some way, shape or form. Do you think this was pre-planned? Like I'm not going to keep this baby. It's going to go away.
I can't imagine. I mean, I've had three kids, right? As an adult person here, I can't imagine going through a childbirth alone in my room for the first pregnancy in particular,
right,
managing this all myself and then saying, and I'm going to snuff the baby and stuff it all in the closet as any kind of a rational plan. I mean, that's just not a rational plan. So I tend to look at she was living in this kind of denial or dissociative state almost, telling herself, this isn't going to happen, this isn't going to happen, this just isn't going to happen. And then, oops, here you are in labor. Now you're pushing. Now you've got a baby. And I think it was just panic driven. I don't think it would have been pre-planned. Because as Stacey said, if you were planning, I'm having this baby and I'm going to get rid of it, there are places you could have dropped it in the box and other things you could have done. So... Mm-hmm. So,
and then she went to McDonald's.
Yeah, she literally went to McDonald's and got probably an Egg McMuffin.
We don't know what she got.
Well, I'm just guessing because,
that's what Stacey would want. Is
that's what I made one this morning.
Probably
an
Egg McMuffin for sure. I'm going to go with Big Mac. I'm going to say Big Mac might be what.
Depends on when she went. She gave birth allegedly around 4 in the morning. So if you think about when breakfast time was, were they serving Big Macs when she went?
Yeah, I know she's sitting there thinking, should I wait for lunch or should I hit it before breakfast runs out? You know, it makes you want. I mean, those are the elements to this case that feel so heartless, that feel so disconnected from reality. And obviously you have a child. Only women who have had children will fully understand what that feels like and what's going through one's mind. But that's a traumatic experience for mentally and physically.
Yeah.
So thinking at that moment in time probably is not, at the top of the list in terms of the best skills that you're, exuding into the world. But the fact that it was just kind of keep going on with your day,
it speaks to me of dissociation, this disconnect from this thing that happened was so terrible. I'm disconnecting, and that's a psychological defense mechanism. It's not something that anybody can control. And it's as if this never happened. It's all been put in the closet. A lot of times working with clients, I'll tell them when there's something that's overwhelming them, I'll say, you just put it in a box and put it in the closet for today so you can carry on with your day. And of course, I'm meaning that figuratively, right?
Yeah.
So they're compartmentalizing, but it's almost like she took this horrible thing that had happened, she put it in a box, put it in a closet, a bag in this case, in the closet, and was going to go on with her day. And so it's really kind of a psychological stress reaction. That's sort of how it looks to me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I have an aunt who's deceased now, but she was an emergency room nurse in Colorado for decades. And she used to tell me about the pregnant women that would come in, younger teenage girls with their mothers, and the mothers would be saying, oh, she's having terrible back pain. Something's wrong with her. You've got to help her. We think she's ate something terrible. She's been poisoned, all these symptoms. She's throwing up. And the nurse would take one look at her and go, she's pregnant. She's in labor. But the mothers didn't get it, and the daughters didn't get it either.
That couldn't happen to my little angel. She's pure. She never would be pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the mom got her to the hospital and they had a baby, you know. So
go ahead, Stacey.
What about, like, can we take the angle of, let's just say her hormones were completely effed up? It's a possibility. Yeah. Could this have just been like a psychotic break for her? Is this something that maybe her attorneys could use as a defense of some sort, that she just was completely out of whack from the pregnancy? We know that postpartum depression is real. There are all kinds of factors that they could throw out there. Maybe this wasn't her. This was something that just took over her body.
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it. I think just the hormonal cascade that you get during labor and birth can certainly alter your perceptions and make you have very poor judgment. And so could these have the biological factors going on? Could this have impacted her judgment at that time? I think you could make a case that it had something to do with it.
Are we at the cusp of going off a cliff here with a lot more Lincoln Snellings about to take the stage of this weird, perfect storm of disconnect from reality, narcissism, whatever you want to call it, with younger folks, and lack of care where they should be able to get it, lack of being able to have an abortion if you want to have an abortion. Are we going, I mean, obviously it feels like we are going back in time where, you know, there, you know, many years ago when people, you know, many people weren't around, there were, you know, the coat hanger abortions and all sorts of horrible things that were going on all around us. You may have an aunt or an uncle you don't know about because of that. I'm not saying that in jest. It's real. It's very true. That was the solution. And that's, you know, that's horrible in itself that one would have to do that to themselves. But are we, you know, you have this storm of, you know, lack of critical thinking, lack of pre-planning anything. Your brain's not fully developed. You don't have the outlets to go get the help and the care that you may need in that sort of a crisis, in that sort of a situation. I can't tell you the amount of women I have met in my life that I've known, that I've been in relationships with, that have told me the story of, when I was young, I had one. And nobody else knows about it.
Oh, I know a ton of women like that.
Yes.
I can't tell you the amount. And people are like, oh, I'm not fucking exaggerating.
Nope.
I am not fucking exaggerating.
No.
It is high. And I think society doesn't want to accept that or realize that. But, you know, they had the care that they needed, and some of them are happy with the decision. Some of them say, you know, knowing what I know now or what I feel now, I would have made a different choice. It's a personal choice. Regardless of that, the option was there, and they were able to move on with their life, and they were able to go and continue their life. Many of them went and had families and kids, and you would have no fucking clue that was part of their story. But we've now eliminated that option for so many of them, it's like, well, you can travel across state lines and do this and that. Yeah, you can. And I've seen it with friends. I've seen it, heartbreaking stories with very close friends of what they've had to do and what they've had to endure with their young people in their lives. just to get the care that they need. I feel like Lankin Snelling is just the tip of the iceberg of where you're going to see a lot more of this happening and everybody going, how could she do it? Why did this happen? Well, it's a mix. There's a lot of reasons why. And it doesn't justify Lankin Snelling in any way, shape, or form for what she did. But you get this mix of all that together, these circumstances, you're going to naturally get more of this with folks that don't make great decisions.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. It is a really scary time to be a young woman in the U.S. right now, because there have always been teen pregnancies. There have been molestations, incest. These things are not stopping. They're not going to stop.
And they're not uncommon.
They're not uncommon. And if we could have stopped all these things as a society, we would have stopped it long ago, right? Young girls being exploited by older men. My mother was exploited at age 13 by a 35-year-old man, got pregnant, and married him, was forced to marry him at age 13. So, you know, we are going back to those days. We are returning to those times. And you know, will we see more cases like this? Undoubtedly. And particularly in religious families where girls still would feel a great deal of shame, they're going to be the ones that don't tell and that end up trying to hide it and then have a birth where there's a terrible outcome.
Isn't that the irony of it all?
Yeah.
It comes back to religion. Mm-hmm. It comes back to God. It comes back to like, what we're doing all the right things here. And I can guarantee some of these folks that I know who've had that story, their uber Republican spouse has no fucking clue.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's the reality of it, that this stuff happens. And just because we like to pretend it doesn't and we're going to legislate against it happening doesn't mean it's not going to fucking happen. And when it happens and young people make bad choices, which inevitably they will, we can't be shocked by them. Mm-hmm. That's the scary part of this. Stacey, what are people saying in the chat?
Oh, it's blowing up. Jeannie said, feeling that baby move in the last trimester, what did she think it was? Taco Bell? I had to point that one out. I thought that was a interesting one. And Jeannie also said, I was her age when I had my son. I was scared to death when I was in labor. Can't imagine doing it at home. Mm-hmm. And I want to add the other part. Can't imagine doing it alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had like food poisoning by myself. It's terrifying. You think you're mm-hmm. going to die. I can't imagine giving birth to a child by yourself and trying to hide it. I can't imagine what she was going through by herself, that she didn't feel that she could call a friend.
Yeah.
She couldn't call her parents. She couldn't call an RA if she was in a dorm. I mean, why can't you call somebody?
Well, and that's not to say those things didn't exist that she couldn't have. She chose not to.
She didn't feel that she could do that. Mm-hmm. So what is going on in her world that she feels that if she reaches out to her best friend, she's going to be judged? If something tragic happened to me right now like that, there's at least five people in my life that I know I could call and say, mm-hmm. holy shit, what do I do here?
Mm-hmm.
And what was that? I mean, exactly. Like, what is that? Is that shame? Is that, would they not be receptive in any way, shape, or form? I mean, and they again, like I said earlier, her circle, her family, they may have been completely, oh my gosh, we're going to help you get through this. We don't know the answer. It could have been a distortion in her mind, thinking that it would have been a completely different reaction. I'm just thinking back to being young, and there's many a times where you think, oh my God, my family's going to think this of me if I tell them that. Mm-hmm. And if you do tell them, they're like, oh, you're like, holy shit, that returned a lot better than I thought it would. But your brain at that moment in time is telling you otherwise. And sometimes you don't know till you get there. And again, that's reps, that's experience, that's age, that's developing your prefrontal cortex and understanding that just because you tell yourself something's going to be horrific doesn't mean it is. But again, perfect storm of all this. You can't expect someone of that age to be thinking as they would at 40 as they are at 20 or 22 or whatever she was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true.
Anything else in the chat that's of note?
Yes. Let me go back to it and see if I can find it. the last 24 says, was this like the child that was pushed into beauty pageants? But in this case, she was pushed into cheerleading, pure speculation here. I did see a picture of her online where she was the fairest of the fair. Like she was either she had won it. She had the crown on her head. I know in the South, beauty pageants are a very big deal. Again, it's that body image, having to live up to maybe the parent standards. I've known a lot of people in pageants down south.
Every image of her that we've seen online other than her mugshot has been carefully curated.
Correct.
I mean, anything that she like it out there, she looks perfect. She looks beautiful and great. But there's a facade to that, obviously, because what was going on the outside was not what was going on the inside. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I let's talk about that culture a little bit. And I don't know how much that would have played into this, but just theoretically, that whole scene, the scene of let's get our young girls to start looking like they're far older than they actually are. I'm talking more like the JonBenet type.
I was just going to say,
where, you know, they had her dressed up like a 30-year-old prostitute and she's, you know, a small child. That's a very toxic world, a very toxic land that seems to exist out there. And then I can't imagine there's anything healthy at the end of the day that comes out of that shit. As much as the pageant moms like to tell themselves that there is, I think you end up with a lot of fucked up kids.
Parading around in a bathing suit. I mean, I was in the Miss Teen Minnesota pageant and I felt violated when I was done. I was out in heels and a swimsuit. I have the picture. It's mortifying looking back at it now. I'm like, what the F was I doing?
How did that happen? How did you get into was that a choice? You signed up? I don't know the story.
It was a choice, absolute choice. And you paid money to enter these pageants. It's not like, oh, you're gorgeous, we need you in this pageant. No, you pay good damn money to be part of this pageant. So what was required was a gown, and both had to be in heels, and a swimsuit. And then this one didn't have a talent competition, but there I was parading around in a one-piece swimming suit with black, like, high heels. Like, they had to be, I think it was 3-inch heels or higher.
And how old were you?
I was 15.
Jesus Christ. And this is normalized. I mean, this stuff still is normalized out there. It's insane. It's insane. The parallels of the universe that we live in and the country that we live in and the standards that we have. And on one hand, we say, this is horrible. This is exploitative. And the other one, it's like, sign up.
Yeah.
We'll take your money. Yeah. This sounds great. And then when something horrible happens and these kids end up totally fucked in the head, oh, we don't know how that happened. I wonder. It's a horrible case all around, but an interesting one to dive into psychologically because, I feel like we're at the tip of the iceberg with more of this shit. Siobhan Scotts, thank you for joining us. Your memoir out right now, Nightbird, very much worth checking out. And then, of course, The Minds of Mass Killers, both available wherever books are sold. Please do go and check all of those out. That'll wrap this up. Until next time, for Todd, for Stacey, for Siobhan, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.